Welcome to episode 13 of the Trendsetters Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Kay. I hope you guys all had a great Thanksgiving. I'm super excited to have on Noah Friedman on the show today. Noah is the COO of 3x3 Insights, one of the companies part of Loeb NYC. In this episode, we talk about Noah's experience at 3x3 Insights, how he balances his time with everything else he is up to, and his advice for young entrepreneurs and investors. I hope you enjoy it. Noah, welcome to the show. I appreciate you coming on.
It is an honor and pleasure to be here, brother. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. We've been trying to get this worked out. I appreciate you taking the time. Yeah. So besides, go through your background a little quickly on the key things people should know, besides the long intro on all the business stuff you've been up to. If you could sort of talk about, first off, your business experience, but then the other stuff that's been part of your life. Obviously, 3x3 is not the only thing you focus on.
Sure. So I got started off in the world of venture capital when I was an undergrad in college, actually. Right after my sophomore year at Boston University, I was introduced to a gentleman by the name of Michael Loeb, who I imagine a lot of the listeners here may have heard of, who runs founder and CEO of Loeb NYC, which is a family office venture capital or venture collective, as we like to call it. And I was introduced to him when I was a wee little 18-year-old, fascinated and obsessed with the world of entrepreneurship. I'd always been sort of a hustler, an entrepreneur, obsessed with the world, as I'm sure a lot of the listeners will resonate with. And long story short, I sort of became one of the first ever interns before there was such a thing as an intern class at Loeb NYC. And, you know, the long story short is that I fell in love with the place Loeb NYC and really saw it as an opportunity to not only cut my teeth in the world of venture capital, but I got some good at-bats to do things a little bit early for my age, if you will, and tried to just take advantage of every opportunity that I could to show what I was made of and show that I belonged. After that summer interning, I became the Boston-based representative, and in one way or another have been working with and for Michael Loeb ever since. Worked on a few businesses during my senior year, got involved in helping to rebuild and restructure the internship program, helped start up a few things, do some internal deals, and then worked all through senior year, spent some time in California with a Loeb portfolio company running some of the business strategy and partnerships, and then graduated and came on in sort of a junior executive managerial role.
I can't speak either today. I don't know what's up.
I don't know. It's something in the air that Thanksgiving week, something in the water. And then helped start up a company here called 3x3, which we'll get into. Which I now operate as the COO of. We've been at that one for about 18 months. That's a lot of the business experience. And through really getting thrown into the deep end of VC and business building and running companies at a young age, I've been fortunate enough to have an opportunity to really get to lead and experience things, not through theory, but through practice of actually having to do the things and live through them. And, you know, it's a cool experience to get to be at the helm of things at an early age, and tremendously grateful for Loeb and the opportunities I've had here. And it's given me a perspective on what it means to try to start and build companies at a young age. And I think that's really become sort of a foundation off of which a lot of my philosophies of life are based. I've started to advise and consult for other businesses that I think could use some of the perspective that I've had, generally early stage, but a variety of different stage companies. And then outside of business and venture capital and technology startups, which is the 9-to-5, if you will, I've also got a background as an actor and have gotten heavily involved in the world of production. Have been producing a music-oriented show for the past year and a half with my uncle, actually, which we can get into. And we actually just released the trailer last week and are preparing to release episode 1 on December 3rd. So safe to say it's been a busy couple of years building a company and building a TV show on the side. But it's sort of what keeps me alive. It's my oxygen. And so it's there's a lot going on across business, across production, across acting and media and all the things. But it's a blast, and I'm really grateful.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to hit on, because I think everyone probably from the business side sees you just as running 3x3. Everyone on the acting side only sees you doing that. But obviously, you do all of them and fit them into your schedule. And yeah. I want to make sure we hit on each of them. But I guess we'll start on the Loeb and 3x3 side, because I think that's where I met you, right? I met you through...
Yeah, at Michael's house. That's right.
Exactly.
Shout out to Dylan Gambardella for the introduction and the Next Gen team.
Dylan is awesome. Dylan and Justin from Next
Gen. Love Next Gen.
Obviously,
I mention a ton. I think I have dinner or lunch with Dylan tomorrow, actually. Got to tell him that we recorded the episode.
Of course.
But going into sort of the background of getting placed into the company and then progressing from an intern to now the COO of 3x3. First off, can you give us a quick rundown of what 3x3 is, what you guys do? I think it's super interesting if people don't understand the beverage and sort of liquor space.
Yeah, sure. So I'm going to start really high level for those who are not familiar with the alcohol industry, the beverage alcohol industry. In the industry, there's a channel called the independent channel, which is the mom and pop stores that all of us who are of legal drinking age buy our alcohol at generally. That's the mom and pop store on the corner where you're going to go in and buy your bottle of wine or your liquor, whatever it is that you're drinking. That channel, it turns out, called the independent, is disproportionately valuable in terms of the consumer spending that goes through that channel, and disproportionately underserved in terms of the amount of data availability and real marketing solutions that can be deployed against it. What that means in terms of data is that for any given manufacturer, think Diageo, Pernod Ricard, Moët Hennessy, upwards of 60% of their volume of sales, i.e. the money that they make as a business in the billions of dollars, is going to flow through the independent channel, but less than 5% of their marketing budget, give or take, is going to be allocated against it. Now, why is that? It's because it's fragmented. There's tens of thousands of individual stores. There's no centralization. And most importantly, there's no source for any data availability that comes out of the channel. In short, in layman's terms, people don't know who's drinking out of the independent channel and they don't know why they're drinking. And so that creates this sort of delta of the 60% of sales and 5% of marketing spend. And 3x3 was born to blitz and attack that delta. And so what we do is we're a marketing solutions provider to help brands and retailers win and dominate in the independent channel.
So we dive in on that.
Yeah.
Essentially, some of these independent liquor stores, they have no idea what's converting and selling well, and they don't really have a process on the back end.
The independent liquor stores themselves are going to range from the small, true one-stop shop that's run by one or two people that's doing $500,000 to $2 million in top-line revenue per year. They may know intuitively what's selling in their own store.
But there's no data.
There's no data on it. There's no ability to retarget their customers. They don't know what their competition's doing. And they're operating sort of in this vortex when Amazon and Total Wine and the headwinds of the industry are trying to eat their lunch. And then on the flip side, you've got the manufacturers who have, let's call that mom and pop store, Joe Schmo's Liquor. They just see a whole bunch of Joe Schmo's liquors and they're like, I don't know how the hell we're going to attack that. There's so many Joe Schmo's, where do we even start? We don't even know what's happening in one Joe Schmo, much less the whole channel. How should we even think about attacking that? Let's just spend all our money on TV commercials at Walmart because we understand that.
Got it. So they have no idea how to work on the digital side and back end, and that's where you guys come in to help them with those analytics.
Correct. So the place 3x3 starts for the brands is by providing a foundation of real transaction and consumer level data. We collect that from a network of stores that we've built ourselves over the past 18 months. We've got over 1,400 stores in the network, expanding into Mexico and across 30 states in the country. From those stores, we're collecting transaction level data directly from the point of sale system that we're aggregating, analyzing, and using to build addressable segments of consumers based on their actual buying behavior. And I'll translate that into layman's terms. Basically, what that allows you to do is say, rather than if I'm brand X and I want to drive more sales of my product, rather than saying, I'm just going to target a whole bunch of people on Facebook that might buy my product and hope that the advertising works, you can segment and tailor the creative and execution against different addressable segments of audiences based on their actual purchase behavior. That's a fancy way of saying we understand who's buying and how to reach them with the right message. And that's what 3x3 is building its business on.
It's such an interesting model because I think when people originally think of companies, that whole B2B market, it's not the sexy side of business, but there's so much info and money to be made on that side as well.
100%. And I just think there's a new paradigm of where marketing's going. Like, I always give the analogy, like, it literally feels sometimes like Amazon knows me better than my own mother because you're scrolling through IG or Facebook and you get hit with an ad for the product and you're like, shit, I didn't even know that I wanted that, but I kind of want that.
They know before I know.
And it's like, mom is texting me like, hey, what do you want for Christmas? And I'm like, mom, talk to Amazon. Like, they know the deal.
It's insane.
It's insane, but it's the reality of the game we're playing. And you think about these billion-dollar CPG companies and retail companies that are such a large portion of our economy. that are still playing with strategies from 1999 because they just haven't figured out how to create the foundation of analysis and understanding their customer that allows them to customize that message. And Amazon's out here playing in 2030. It's a massive paradigm shift that I think people are starting to catch on to. Obviously, you're seeing it, but you talk about opportunity and where there's just massive deltas and opportunities to play. It's really there. It really is a huge, huge tectonic shift in the way that brands are going to engage their consumers.
So diving into your day-to-day, what's a typical day look like at 3x3 in your position?
So I spent the first 18 months in more of a true COO role where I was working with the team to help build that network and structure the team and the organization around how we scale the data acquisition side of the business to have something to sell. In short, so figuring out what the value proposition and technology productization and team structure was going to need to be to allow us to scale to 1,400 stores in 18 months and beyond, and getting our internal organization built to support that. And now in the past couple of months, really, I've transitioned into more of a growth and top-line focused member of the team, where my real focus has turned away from building the asset and now towards monetizing the asset and working more on the brand side to bring brand partnerships to fruition for the business and getting more and more of the revenue generating side of the business going.
So for somebody that is in high school or college now, and they think 5 years, 10 years down the line, they want to end up as the CEO of venture funded startup, exactly where you are, what are some of the advice and steps you'd take to sort of get to that point? What types of experiences do you think are incredibly valuable or things people could do to get a step ahead?
It's a great question. You know, I'm fortunate enough that I've had an opportunity to speak in front of a good amount of college audiences and, you know, early entrepreneurs and executives. And the message that I try to deliver is one that focuses on meritocracy. And I sort of summarize it in an analogy that really defines how I live my life across business, across athletics, across performance, across really everything I do, which is the following. If you picture a rocket ship and imagine that the only objective of that rocket ship is to get from point A to point B. In the sake of a rocket ship, it's to get to the moon. And you look at early stage business or whatever endeavor it is that you want to set out on, the only real thing that matters is the outcome of making it to that next destination. And the reality is, in business, the absolute best kept secret that I've proven to myself time and time again, that I fundamentally believe to my core, is that if you're able to sneak on to the rocket ship, whatever it takes to sneak on, if you're able to get onto it and grab a steering wheel and prove that you know how to drive, prove that you are capable enough to actually drive the thing, no one ever asks you how old you are. No one ever asks you where you went to college, what credentials you have, why you're qualified, what your parents do, how much money you've got. Any of the other things stop mattering because the only thing that matters is that you're executing. And so I would say for those who are looking to get into this world or looking to build a career or a life in venture capital and start up a business, focus on the reality of what it takes to actually do the thing you want to do. Don't get caught up in the rhetoric around credentials or qualifications, because despite the fact that that stuff matters and is there for a reason, I think that we as a society tend to put up arbitrary and artificial blockers and create swim lanes that in reality don't have to exist. My whole approach to things is like, what is the thing that I want to be doing? And what's the fastest path to actually get there and prove that I can do that thing? And I think that, you know, I don't want to say that that means that you can skip the line or not have to pay your dues, because I think that's absolutely important. But I think that getting real experience and focusing on the outcome and focusing on the execution of the thing, whatever that thing is the most important.
And so just finding your way in the door, like you said, like do whatever
absolutely.
It takes to get in there.
Absolutely. I would my whole thesis is way more actually doing the thing, way less textbook. You know, try five more things and read, you know, three less textbooks about.
Because everyone's doing the textbook model, right? So it's like, well, how are you going to stand out if everyone does that?
I went to undergrad at BU, and I have nothing against BU. It was fantastic, and I had a great experience, and I was a business school student there. The reality is I went to the university of like Loeb and TechCrunch and reading all the things I could read and talking to all the people that I could talk. It was more Loeb University, because in between classes, I was actually on the phone trying to do real deals and build companies through this program. and through the world of Loeb NYC. And that's where I got the real training ground. You know, all the skill sets that I'm deploying now, and candidly, despite the fact that it may sound like I know things, I don't think I know shit because I'm only 24 and I don't think I know anything. But whatever it is that I do know has come from doing and observing people who really have done it, much less from reading about it. You know, I give way more credit to the Michael Loebs, Mike Provinces, Jason Slosbergs, Mark Schultzes of mentors of mine who I've learned from and watched them do it up close than to the textbooks I read in college.
100%. I think I'm in college right now. I've been in school, I guess, for 14 years. I can guarantee you I've learned more in the last 2 years of life experience, business experience, and any education than I've learned in my 14 years in a classroom.
Hands 100%. And we've talked about that, right? Like, there's something to be said for like getting close to the sun, getting close to the nucleus. I really like that word of like, where is the activity, the most concentrated activity of the highest level of the thing that you want to be doing? And how do you move towards that as much as you can? Because I genuinely believe if you're good enough and if you have what it takes, or even if you're just willing to put the work in and you don't know anything, if you've got the intrinsics of like hard work and passion and a willingness to like get shit done, excuse my French, and you get yourself close to the people who are actually doing it, you can find a way to stick around, i.e. sneaking onto the rocket ship. And for you, I mean, there's no better example than you of figuring out what is the thing I want to do. I want to figure out how to build companies. I want to build agencies. I want to be a social media influencer and help others do the same. Let me just start doing it. You know, that's,
yeah, I think that's the thing that a lot of, I appreciate that, but I think the thing that most people fuck up is that they wait until mm-hmm. the perfect moment. And mm-hmm. we've discussed this. There never is a perfect moment. It's like, yeah. you just got to do it and you have to know that you're going to mess up and you have to know that things aren't going to go great, but you just have to go for it.
Totally. And I think to be completely honest, I think I've struggled with that a bit myself. You know, I had people a few years ago telling me that I should start to speak more about this thesis and this philosophy and start to mentor people more. And I think for probably a year or so longer than I should have, I resisted out of a fear of like, well, maybe I should just wait a little bit longer. And it's like, you know what? This is my truth. This is what I believe. And hopefully some people are going to get value out of it.
100%.
And I think it's the right thing to do to share that in the appropriate mediums.
So what is your next 6, 12, 18 months look like on your personal side and sort of what you guys are up to?
So I'm trying to stay focused on what's in front of me right now, which means getting 3x3 to an increasingly good place as a business and getting my media property Sanborn Sessions continuously scaled and launched to a wider and wider audience. I think I'm trying to stay focused and prioritize those two because they're real and avoid this shiny silver object syndrome that plagues so many entrepreneurs. I think I'm realistic that I've always got side projects and side things going on and always advising and consulting on friends, companies, and early stage brands that need help. So I think the focus right now, at least for the next few months, is going to be getting these two things not only across the finish line, but across the finish line in spades. And then it's just about how do I just continue to level up and focus on the next big thing that sounds both exciting and meaningful and purposeful and fun.
That's awesome. And what's the time balance like? Because I know I ask this to pretty much everyone that comes on the show, but doing everything you're up to, being the CEO of a company that's fast growing, venture funded, in addition to doing your other projects, what's some of your skills and strategies for balancing your time, making sure you have enough time for everything?
I want to clarify, Mike Province is the CEO of 3x3. I'm the COO. So yep. Mike deserves all the credit. How do I balance time? I think there's a fiscal responsibility that I feel, I think rightfully so, to give priority to 3x3 as something that is venture funded. And so I think my normal working hours, call it 7:30 to 6:30, are almost entirely devoted to 3x3, if not entirely devoted, or to Loeb, call it that. I'd say 85% of my time is 3x3 within Loeb, and there's another 15 that's miscellaneous. And I'm pretty strict to maintain that balance, with the exception of big things that may come up. But I would say that I sacrifice a bit on the social life aspect during the week, just because the 6 to 8 to 9 is generally devoted more to production, to media, et cetera. There are exceptions to that rule, obviously. If there's a massive meeting for something production related that happens in the middle of the day, I'll plan ahead to make sure that I can make that, and vice versa. But I would say generally the 9 to 5 figuratively and 7:30 to 6:30 literally is focused on the venture and tech and startup stuff. and the evenings and weekends are more devoted to production. And then depending on the reality of what's happening that given week, it may ebb and flow a bit. But I try to be pretty strict and responsible personally, just because I feel that obligation to do the right thing, which means not mixing things and not prioritizing properly.
Yeah, I think that's important, just because I think people realize, like, everyone has 10,000 things going on, but I really think it just comes down to prioritizing, at least in my life, like knowing that, okay, work is going to be the focus during the week, but it's also important for me to stay happy and do stuff that I enjoy over the weekends.
100%. I mean, I really believe in that one, that the flame fizzles out pretty quickly if you don't feel a sense of passion and purpose for what you're doing.
Because otherwise, you can go straight every day for 5 years, but if you're not passionate about it and if the other parts of your life are falling off, you're going to burn out and be miserable.
Totally. And it's also really fun and cool to work on shit that you're excited about.
100%.
Like it stops feeling like work, and you start looking forward to waking up early to do the extra thing or do the extra work or like working on the weekends. It sounds lame, but it's like I've had many a phenomenal Saturday spent in the office with the team building shit. And it's like, God, what more of a purposeful way to spend a day if you're into it, right? And that doesn't mean that I don't have my fair share of fun, because of course balance is important and that's a big part of my life. But if you find something that's really getting you going like that and you feel a sense of purpose around it, it's one of the most powerful things that I wish upon everybody who hears this and beyond.
Yeah, I think that's incredibly important and something everyone should focus on regardless of what industry they're in. Before we wrap this up, I just want to hit on a couple of sort of quicker questions that I'd love your take on. So overall, you spend a lot of your time in the industry of alcohol, beverages, all that kind of stuff. Where do you see that moving? Like, do you think Amazon jumps in and sort of, like, as you said, they have all the data anyway. They know stuff that you want to buy before you do. Do you think they make that jump to go, I mean, they're already in the space, but where do you see it moving over the next 10 years? Do you think more one-off shops start to open, or do you think they start to close down and it becomes more controlled by Amazon, Total Wines, all the big stores?
Yes. I think Amazon's a threat to everybody. I think Amazon is absolutely coming to play here in beverage alcohol. Where do I think the industry as a whole is going? I think consumerism is the most powerful force in all of this, and it's going to become the fastest path to what's not most convenient necessarily, but what's best for the consumer. Speed and convenience are important. That's why Amazon is winning across many dimensions, but that doesn't mean that the importance of a real experience, something tactile, is going to go away. I think that you're just going to see a bifurcation away from moderately convenient, moderately good experience, and moderately priced. Like the middle ground, I think, is going to go away. And you're going to see more of an emphasis on, I either want it now and I don't care how I get it, Amazon, or I want to have an experience and feel something when I buy the thing, the independent channel. I think that bifurcation is going to be real. And so the ones that I think are the most at risk are the ones who have no, it sounds obvious, but have no differentiating factor. You know, and that's what sort of 3x3 is trying to help those stores compete more effectively. But I think that you're going to see more and more brands start to start up, because I think that entrepreneurs are realizing that beverage is an attractive area. The multiples are good. The revenue can be good. That doesn't mean that it's easy, but I think there's a lot of opportunity. And I think you're going to see a lot of the big brands start to take a much more M&A heavy approach to just buying the fastest thing that creates any level of pull with the consumer. You know, there's a symptom of the fact that the brands are so far removed from their end consumer, they have no clue how to reach them. So if you're an early stage brand who's figured out how to captivate some niche audience of drinkers in a certain pocket, you are a very valuable asset to the big brands of the world who don't have the infrastructure or data to be able to tap into that. So I think you're going to see these brands start to take on, they're going to try and do a lot of innovation themselves internally. I think that that's valuable in many ways, but I think the reality of how this plays out is that it's going to be a race to the consumer. An absolute race to the end consumer for who can grab the most attention and the most loyalty quickest. And I think you're only going to see it consolidate as fast as the brands are willing to buy, the big brands are willing to buy the little ones. I think that's just the reality, the way that it's moving. And that means that the advantage and differentiating and competitive factor is going to come down to who's got the best way to engage and target their end consumer.
And that's where 3x3 comes in.
Yeah, I had to bring it back with one last plug. But in all seriousness, that is where 3x3 comes in. And I think that's also just the macro that you're seeing across pretty much every single industry there is right now. It's what's happening in the streaming wars. It's what's happening across retail. It's what's happening in liquor and CPG and insurance. It's just a race to collect the most rich, robust, and applicable data sets on end consumers and create the most contextually relevant solutions for them. I think the days of mass spray and pray are long over, and the brands who are quickest to realize that and adjust their strategies accordingly are the ones who are most likely to win.
Yeah, it's super fascinating just to see all of the industry. It all comes down to where the consumers go. It's a combination of convenience, loyalty, and brand experience, I think.
100%. Well said.
Where can people stay updated on what 3x3 is up to, what Noah's up to? Where can people see what you guys are up to?
Definitely hit us up at LoebNYC on social, at 3x3 Insights on social. Some awesome content, video, et cetera, coming out across both of those channels. And then if you're crazy enough to want to hear what the hell I'm up to, hit me up at Noah S. Friedman on all social channels. Say hi. If you've heard this, would absolutely love to chat. Any friend of Jesse's is a friend of mine.
Yeah, cool. Definitely reach out to Noah if you're interested in the space. Him and Globe do an amazing job with young entrepreneurs and cool startups. I highly recommend you check them and Globe out. Noah, thanks so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
Brother, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. As always, go join our community at join.trendsetterspodcast.com, where you can get some exclusive content, including one question per episode that is not aired publicly, only to people that are part of our community, in addition to some weekly advice and news on the marketing and podcasting industry from me. Also, I'd love to hear your questions, comments, concerns, and anything else. So shoot me an email at jesse@trendsetterspodcast.com. And then you can always reach me on my Instagram at jesse.kay11. Thanks so much, and looking forward to the next one.